Welcome to the Shir and Targum in Parshas Yisrael. We spoke yesterday about Yisrael's advice to Moshe Rabbeinu, where Yisrael advises Moshe Rabbeinu that he should delegate many of his responsibilities and create some kind of system whereby lower level judges, so to speak, could deal with many of the issues that would come up in Klal Yisrael. But as we saw yesterday in the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, in Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Chaf, there were certain things that Yisrael felt that Moshe Rabbeinu should not delegate. Those things included, according to the Yonasan ben Uziel, teaching the people how to daven in shuls, teaching them how to do chesed, teaching them how to bury people, teaching them how to do bikur cholim, to visit the sick, and to teach people the concept that even for Rishoyim, even for people who are evil, we should go lifnei mishuras hadin, we should go above and beyond the letter of the law in taking care of them. So just to add a little bit to what we said yesterday, you know, it's a little bit counterintuitive. You would think that, you know, you don't need somebody of the stature of Moshe Rabbeinu to teach people how to do bikur cholim, how to do gemilas chasadim. You know, you'd think these are things that could be delegated. I need the Gadol Hador to illustrate these things. I need the Gadol Hador to teach everybody how to daven. And it would appear that the answer to that question is yes. And that, you know, the understanding of that is that it's the Gadol Hador who sets the tone for the people as a whole. If the Gadol Hador is going to teach people about the importance of davening, so then people will take away from that, oh, wow, davening is really very central to our lives. If the Gadol Hador is going to teach people about how to do chesed, how to do bikur cholim, etc., so they'll take away the message that these things are very essential. And that is the message. The message is that, you know, you can have many talmidei chachamim who can take care of the specific questions that come up, but the fact that these items are dealt with by the Gadol B'Yisrael, by the CEO, so to speak, of the Jewish people, impresses upon the people that that these are central, essential things, you know, in a way that they may not have understood on their own. You know, you look to the leadership at the very top to convey what are the top values that the people hold of. So it's fascinating to note that, you know, Yisrael understood that. He understood that these are things that you can't delegate to anybody else. When it comes to delegation, however, Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Chaf Aleph, so Yisrael gives a specific list to Moshe Rabbeinu of the qualities that Moshe Rabbeinu should look for in creating a system of people who will deal with questions on a, you know, on a broader kind of level. V'yato sechze mikol ha'am, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, should look to find among the people, anshei chayil, people of stature. Most of the Rishonim write rich people, anshei chayil. Rashi writes ashirim, rich people. You should find rich people to adjudicate the disputes among the Jewish people. Why rich people? She'ein tzricha lahachnif ulahakir panim, because the rich people can't be bought off. You know, they don't have to show favoritism to anybody or the like. Okay, so look for people of means. Yirei Elokim, people who fear God. Anshei emes, people of truth, truthful people. Sonei botza, people who hate betza. What's betza, and what are people who hate betza? So the Rashbam writes over here, sonei betza, shochad v'gezel koroi betza b'chol makom. The term betza refers to money which is gotten illegally, either as a bribe or through theft. In other words, if you're going to look for people to serve as dayanim, as judges, you should find people who are sonei betza, who hate bribery. You know, people who are not going to be bought off, people who are not corrupt or the like. Now, the old joke goes, how do you find such people? So the answer is, you know, for money you can buy anything. But that's the Rashbam, right? Sonei betza, people who hate bribery, people who hate ill-gotten gains, you know, and again, essentially that's you know, saying the same thing as anshei emes, people who are people of truth, and people who are not going to be bought off, you know, with money to pervert the justice that they mete out to others. It's interesting to note that the Targum Unculus over here may not agree with this rendering of the Rashbam. So on the word sone betza, which again, according to the Rashbam, we said those who hate bribery or ill-gotten gains, the Targum Onkelos writes, desonan lekabala mamo. They hate receiving money. Not illegal money, not illicit money, not bribery, money. They hate receiving money. What does that mean? Right, exactly. That's definitely the kind of guy you want to hire for any job, right? A guy who hates receiving money. No. Please, I'm a volunteer, right? But what does that mean in this context? So the Ramban talks about this this Targum Onkelos, and he writes, "Ein hamom." Onkelos Omar, sonan lekabala mamon. He quotes this Targum Onkelos that the imperative that Yisro gave Moshe was to find people who hate receiving money. Ve'ein hamamon etzlo shochar. It does not mean that these are people who hate bribes. It goes without saying that Moshe Rabbeinu should not look to appoint people as dayanim who are going to take bribes. That doesn't have to be said. I mean, we just got through saying that he has to look for anshei emes, for people of truth. Rak shelo yekablu momo b'mnei odo b'matana over halva'o le'olam. Yisro tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you should look for people who just don't take favors from other people. Not in the context of judging a court, a din Torah or the like. But you should find people who are self-sufficient, who are not looking, they don't enjoy gifts from people, they're not looking to take handouts or even loans from people. Why? Shlo yisu lahem panim beis hamishpat. Because even if they're not taking a bribe at this particular time, in other words, if a case is in the middle of being adjudicated and somebody walks over with a wad of cash to one of the dayanim and says, I'm right, right? Obviously that's illicit. But let's imagine that, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the dayan accepted a loan from one of the litigants, or he took a gift from one of the litigants 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever it happens to be. Even that could cloud his judgment, even if it's not directly related to this particular din Torah which is going on. So that's how the Ramban understands Onkelos. They hate... Now again... I don't know that there was a person alive who never took a gift from anyone in any context, a person alive who never took a loan from anyone in any context. But if you look for people who in general are adverse to such things, so they're likely to be much more, straight when it comes to judging Dinei Torah. Right? The Pasuk in Mishlei says, Sonei matanos yichya, the person who hates gifts from others will live a long life. And that's essentially the idea, says the Ramban, which the Targum Onkelos is advocating for over here. Uchi'inyan sha'amru. We find precedent for this interpretation. A Gemara Ksubas, the Gemara Ksubas Kufei Amud Beis says, Hai dayana d'shal she'elta. If you have a dayan, you have a judge, who's in the habit of borrowing things frequently from his neighbors, asur l'mei dandina. He's not allowed to adjudicate cases. Why? Because he owes people. Again, what do you mean he owes people? Right now he doesn't owe anybody. But in other words, the kind of person who's always taking favors from other people is a person who's not going to be as objective as he could possibly be. So that's the Targum. The Ramban says the Targum Onkelos seems to be saying a pshat, which is different than the pshat of the Rashbam. We're not just simply saying that you should avoid people who are subject to bribery. That goes without saying. But you should avoid people who take money in general from other people, because even that clouds their ability to be objective.
Maybe I'm missing something. But somebody who earns a salary.
Yeah.
Now he earns a salary, but not from the people, the litigants.
Right.
Okay, so he can afford not to take a bribe. Someone who's doing it voluntarily, saying, I'm volunteering, don't give me ajira. So don't. He's voting, not necessarily for a favor, but he's saying, if he gets something out of it, not necessarily from the litigants, but he's looking, you know, I don't need a problem. So he volunteers to serve lunch, you know, whatever, at a lunch program. So don't give me problems, and if I need to do something, I need to go online and be first on the line and go ahead of the line, I'll do that because I should get something out of this.
Yeah, I don't think the Tagamunculus is saying that, you know, there's something wrong with a person working a job and taking a salary. I think what he's saying is that if you're the type of person who's constantly borrowing or getting gifts from private individuals outside of the salary that the person earns, so that creates a situation where the person is beholden to other people, you know? So that kind of person, even if, you know, these litigants in particular didn't give him money and didn't give him money in the context of this particular Din Torah, but sooner or later he's going to encounter people that he feels he owes. And, you know, whether he thinks about it or not, that's going to blur his objectivity. I think that's the idea that Targumunculus is bringing out.
I have a good question. Why didn't Moshe have to depend on this show from what type of people to choose? Jews have chosen leaders before, because we had other, you know, leaders from Moshe.
Right. So why did he have to go to Yisro to get advice as to who to choose? The truth is, I mean, Yisro was volunteering all this information. As Moshe wouldn't have picked anybody. Moshe would have kept doing everything on his own. So Yisro has to reassure him that it's okay to delegate. And again, if you've had the experience ever of trying to convince someone who wants to do everything that he should give over some of his responsibilities to someone else, one of the things you have to convince him is that the people he's going to delegate to are going to be competent. So Yisro probably has to stress that. In other words, I'm not telling you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you should take anybody off the street and just, you know, make them dayanim. Take competent people. But if you have the right people, the competent people, you know, you should feel confident that that you can delegate this to others.
Well, what's that worth it? You cannot know 150. The amount of people to choose to ask all these conditions is like almost unbelievable.
Right. Well, the truth is that's what happens, right? In other words, it says later on in Chof Hei, Vayivchar Moshe Anshei Chayil Mikol Yisrael. After the whole list, Moshe Rabbeinu chooses Anshei Chayil. Right? What happened to Yirei Elokim, you know, Anshei Emes Oni Betza? Apparently you couldn't find him, right? He found Anshei Chayil. Okay, you know, it's a 1 out of 4 ain't bad. Right?
Rabbi, this is sort of like a follow-up question to the last question. If Yisrael wasn't at the Matan program, he wasn't necessarily, maybe there's some saving was, but certainly a lot of saving was. Where did he get his tekayach to do the ability, the capacity to do what he did, to make these kinds of recommendations to someone on such a high level like Moshe Rabbeinu?
Okay, I guess if you're right, you're right. You know, you had a good idea? You have a good idea, you pass it on, I guess.
He's still a leadership, but he basically measured he was once a leader.
Right, in Pyro's house, right.
Here. It wasn't like he was just the...
Right, it wasn't a guy off the street.
Or a guy
know,
off
right.
the street.
Right,
you know?
Right. Okay, so in Perek Yutess, the Chumash begins its discussion of Matan Torah. Right? And in describing the story of Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to the top of Har Sinai. Hashem addresses him. Atem re'isem, Perek Yutes Pasuk Dalet. Atem re'isem, Asher Osisi leMitzrayim. You saw what I did to Egypt, to the Egyptians. For Eso Eschem al Kanfei Nisharim, I carried you on eagle's wings. And I brought you to me. What exactly is meant, very, very memorable phrase, right? What exactly is meant by, I carried you on eagle's wings, and I brought you to me? I mean, it's beautiful. It's a very poetic phrase. What exactly does it mean? So the Targum Onkelos renders like this. Atun chazeson, you saw the avodis lemitzroi, you saw what I did to the Egyptians. Va'atelis yoschon kide'al gadfe nishrin. I made you move as if you were on the wings of eagles, right? I made you move as if you were on the wings of eagles. So right off the bat, the Targumunculus tells us that there were no eagles with actual wings. In other words, it's a metaphor. It's not meant in a literal sense. So then, what does it mean, right? So apparently, it implies that Klal Yisrael were enabled to move in a very, very rapid sense. And that's the way Rashi understands it. Rashi quotes this Targum Unculus, and he writes, "Ze Yom Shabo Yisrael Ramses." This refers to the day that Klal Yisrael exited Mitzrayim and came to Ramses. Shahayu Yisrael Mefuzarin B'chol Eretz Goshen. The Jewish people were scattered throughout the whole land of Goshen. It was a whole big region. Ulashah Kalo Kishabo Lisav Lotzeis Nikbetsu Kulam LeRamses. You ever try to get Jews together? It's not a simple thing, right? So all of a sudden, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, we're leaving Mitzrayim. And 3 million people basically are able to gather at a central point and leave Mitzrayim from there. They're all able to leave Ramses in the course of a couple of hours. I mean, you know, the truth is, you think about it, the logistics of that are staggering. You know, it's not like they had a WhatsApp group and, you know, everybody meet me by over here. You know, they moved rapidly, so it was miraculous that they were able to get together and move at such a rapid pace. That's what the pasuk means. Well, eso eschem al kanfei nisharim. Not that I carried you on eagle's wings in a literal sense, but I moved you rapidly. I moved you as if you were being flown by eagles. That's how quick you were able to make it out of Egypt. And then what's the end? Va'avi eschem eloi, and I brought you to me. What do you mean, I brought you to me? Hashem says to the Jewish people. So Targum Unculus translates this, V'karevis yaschan l'pulchani. I brought you close to my service. And again, this is typical of what the Rambam has pointed out before, that the Targum Unculus likes to avoid describing God in human terms. The simple pshat in the Targum Unculus, Hashem is saying, I brought you to me. What do you mean, I brought you to me? Where is Hashem that the Jewish people were brought to him? He's not, he doesn't occupy any physical space. So as I brought you to me is a metaphoric way, again, of saying that you entered into my service, right? Previously, you were not really serving Hashem, but now I inaugurated you into my service. That's what Avies Chem Eloi. That's the Targum Unculus. The Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel has an entirely different understanding of this very, very memorable phrase. So let's see what he says.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My question is, they seem to have two different, I don't know very much, but they seem to have two contradictions in different opinions of the story. If the other one reveals that one thing,
right.
I'm sorry, the other one says something else.
Right. Right, this is different.
They're trying to get to the same thing.
Right, this is different than what we said a minute ago. And this is how it goes. Atun chameson, Madi Avdis Lemitzro, you saw what I did to the Egyptians, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Jewish people. What did I do? V'ta'anis yoschon al anonin, hei ke'al gadfei nishrin, min pelusin. I carried you on clouds as if you were on the wings of eagles out of Ramses. So let's just pause for a minute and compare this Yonasan ben Uziel to Targum Unculus, right? Both of them interpret the wings of eagles metaphorically. They're no eagles, they're no wings. However, the Targum Unculus entirely interprets it metaphorically, and it's about the Jewish people assembling at Ramses speedily, at least the way Rashi understands the Targum Unculus. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel understands that the reference is to the way the Jewish people left Ramses, not how they arrived at Ramses quickly. It's how they left Ramses, and the reference is not to speed. You know, the metaphor of the kanfei nisharim, of the wings of eagles, is not speed, but rather protection. And the Ribbono Shalom, what is the protection that the Ribbono Shalom gave the Jewish people? He surrounded them with the Anoni Akova, right? We know there's another famous Rashi over here that describes, he quotes from Chazal, why were the Jewish people described as being carried out al kanfei nisharim? Because the nesher, the eagle, carries its young on top of its wings to make sure that it's going to, the young chicks are going to be impervious to any arrows which are shot at the eagle. So too, the metaphor of Kanfei Nishar is not a metaphor of speed, it's a metaphor of protection. So I took you out of Ramses al Anonim, on clouds, as if you were on Kanfei Nisharim, as if you were on, you were protected by eagle's wings. So what's Va'avies Chem Eloi? And then I brought you to me. So continues the Yonos of Anuziel as follows. Va'ovelis Yoschon La'asar Beis Mikdosha. I brought you that night, the 15th of Nisan, I brought you out of Mitzrayim to the place of the Beis HaMikdash. Lemebad Tamon Pischa, to perform the service of the Karban Pesach there. Uvahu Leo Yasivis Yaschon LePeilusin, and that night, after you had performed the Karban Pesach, I brought you back to Ramses. Umitamon Karevis Yaschon LeUfano Raisi, and from there I brought you close to learn my Torah. So Targum Yosef Ben Uziel is describing a very, very memorable event. In other words, some of this is metaphoric in the sense that, you know, there are no actual eagles or wings of eagles or the like, but there was a physical carrying of the Jewish people miraculously from one place to another. They sat down on the night of the 15th in Mitzrayim to perform, on the afternoon of Yudalit, of Erev Pesach, on the 14th, they prepared to shecht the Karban Pesach. Where did they end up shechting the Karban Pesach? They thought they were going to shecht the Karban Pesach in Mitzrayim. But miraculously, they were brought to the Beis HaMikdash, the future Beis HaMikdash, the place, the Har HaMoriah. They shechted the Karban Pesach there, and then the Ribbono Shel Olam transported them back to Mitzrayim in order, it sounds like, to actually eat the Karban Pesach in Mitzrayim, in Goshen, on that night. You know, that was a miraculous transport that took place on the afternoon of Erev Pesach, at the time of Shechting the Korban Pesach. Fascinating. But for what, to what end? In other words, okay, so the Ribbono Shel Olam can make as many miracles as he wants, right? And certainly, you know, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to have the equivalent of beaming the Jewish people from place to place, you know, it's no problem from the Ribbono Shel Olam's perspective. But why do that? You know, what's the point of doing that? So it would seem that the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel is reacting to the following question that we might have. How can you have a karbon that's going to be shechted in Mitzrayim? We certainly know that once the Jewish people come into Eretz Yisrael, the whole concept of karbonos is going to be limited to Eretz Yisrael, and eventually it's going to be limited to either Shiloh or the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan Shiloh or the Beis HaMikdash. During both of those periods of time, even shechting a karban outside of the Mishkan Shiloh, the Beis HaMikdash, is going to be prohibited. So how is it possible that Klal Yisrael shechted the Karban Pesach in Mitzrayim? So the simple answer to the question is, well, that's before the rules were made, you know, that's before the Torah was given. You know, there is no concept of, prohibiting the bringing of karbanos outside of Eretz Yisrael. But the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel can't imagine that such a basic and chashuv a karbon like the Karban Pesach, the first karbon the Klal Yisrael perform as a nation, could be performed in Mitzrayim. It's just inconceivable. The simple reading of the Psukim is that the Karban Pesach was brought in Mitzrayim. No, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt it was so important for the Jewish people to bring the Karban Pesach in the right place, in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, that he miraculously transported them to the Beis HaMikdash on that afternoon of Erev Pesach when they were in Mitzrayim. And even though that involved a considerable miracle, it was worth making such a miracle from the Ribbono Shel Olam's perspective because of the absolute necessity that the Karban be shechted in the right place. The Ribbono Shel Olam could not have the Jewish people shechting the Karban Pesach in Mitzrayim. I think that's what's motivating the Yonasan ben Uziel and ultimately the Midrashim to give this interpretation. Again, if there's any, Kadosh Baruch Hu can make any miracle, but there has to be some kind of need for the miracle. The need for the miracle over here is because of this idea that the carbon would have to be shechted in the right place.
Aside from the need that the miracle has to take place, have to have a mark that it did take place in that way.
I guess it was a Masorah that they had it.
That's the case when the Jews had time to say you had the extra show, but they kept on referring back that everything was great and it's right. It's the case. You should have left me in Eretz Yisrael. That should have been the Steiner throughout the next couple of when they had issues. No water, no this, no that. That's, you didn't get that time.
They weren't. I mean, even according to the Medrash, they weren't in Eretz Yisrael for all that long. I mean, it sounds like they were there. They shefted the Korban Pesach, and it was
conceptually,
you know.
Happy there, but you want to take me back?
Yeah. Right. I don't know, but I mean, I guess it was a short-lived experience that they had.
Before the tenth month, the killing of the firstborn.
Yeah.
They put the blood from the sacrifice
right.
in the doorpost.
Right.
So that had to be in Egypt.
Well, so they had the blood in Egypt. I mean, what emerges according to the Targum Yonasan and Nazio, is they shechted the Korban Pesach in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, and then, you know, they brought the blood back with them to Mitzrayim. So how did that happen? The same way, the whole thing is miraculous, you know? I mean, whatever Kasha Yama, the whole thing, that's the Kasha Yama, the blood.
Is before the temple.
Before that night, right.
But that night was when they left. So
they left in the morning. Yeah.
I mean, the night before they left.
Right.
But yet, that was the night of the 10th Makkah.
Right, the Makkah's Bechoros.
So it wasn't a week or 2 weeks that occurred. This all happened the same day.
Right. It's all happening, in the space of a couple of hours.
The other Makkahs were over the course of time.
Right, 100%. The Makkahs, the Mishnah says that the whole series of Makkahs took place over a year.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yes, but this, so the last Makkah, from beginning to end, and even prior to it, all happened in one day.
I mean, you know, the Bukharim all died at midnight,
right.
And the Korban Pesach had been shechted the afternoon before, and they went out the following morning. So yeah, within a space of a couple of hours, all of these events are taking place.
When did they take all the jewelry and dishes and everything from the Mitzrayim? When did they do that?
So that's before they left. So in other words, sometime between the second half of the night and the morning, you know, they went.
They started borrowing.
Yeah. I mean, look, unfortunately, the Egyptians seemed they were all up. You know, in other words, they had all of this happen. Yeah, it was, you're talking about something that happened in incredibly rapid succession. Right. But, you know, sometimes that's the way it is. Things happen very, very rapidly. Okay, we'll pick up over here, Bez Hashem. Oh, what?
Moshe Rabbeinu, in essence, basically what he's saying, spent a moment in Eretz Yisrael, actually.
Right. That's what comes out. I mean, maybe that's what whet his appetite, to go back there. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha, Omer Ratzah, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lizrakos,